Okay.
All right, I'll call the meeting to order. Did everybody have a chance to go over last month's minutes? All right, so
I'll make a motion.
I'll make a motion.
All right, so we'll move on to resolution.
All in favor?
Oh, yeah, all in favor.
Aye.
There we go. All right, we'll start resolution 82. And that's calling on Ulster County.
I thought, Mr. Chairman, that you were going to start with number 112. Is that what you were just suggesting before?
Do
you want me to get that, Nettie?
I don't know why there's a question about this, though.
About 112. I don't know either.
The last double.
New message received from Alta.
Well, we can't do 112 until Christmas.
Right, because we can't vote.
I thought you wanted to.
No, I want whatever. I don't know. What is Ken here? I don't know. Are you here to speak on anything specific? I thought he was invited to be here, so I'm saying to you whatever he's invited to be here for, maybe we.
Senate and Assembly. Let's start from the top.
They want the state to take it over.
That's okay, but we're not calling on the Ulster County.
Yeah, not Ulster County. That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
On the New York State Assembly to take it over. So I think that's got to be reworded.
What's that?
New York State Senate.
Oh, no, this is about the Ulster County delegation.
Right.
Yeah.
It's referring to the delegation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. For those that
Ulster
represent
County, the delegation. And Assembly delegation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There it is. All right. Yeah, that's it. That didn't make sense to me. All right, so, yeah, it's not Ulster County. It'd be the.
I'll move it for discussion.
Which one are we working on?
I'll second it.
82.
82?
Okay. So it should be calling on the Assembly, because it was passed in the Senate. And
no, it wasn't. No, this is.
Oh, this is yours. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
now different.
That one is different.
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, number.
This is, and I purposely put this in because I think the argument that Assemblyman Cahill used for the county to take it over now justifies his argument for the state. And, in just a little history, because Dave, right? Herb.
Just think of Volkswagen.
I remember Licks, but the first name got me.
There you go.
Just take a minute to give you a little bit primary history. For years, at least probably the last 20 years, Kingston representatives, and some from Warsing on occasion, put in resolutions for the county to take over safety net. And we could never get it passed because, and we understood, different towns, many of the towns, didn't have much safety net cost.
Yeah.
So they didn't want the county to take it over because, in effect, they would be looked at, as a raising taxes. They had their arguments. So we were never able to do it until we got a county executive form of government. But the legislature, there was a special committee formed to come up with a way, a means of the county taking over safety net.
Which was the sales tax, right?
They had all different kinds of suggestions, over 7 years, 10 years, 2 years, 3 years. So I attended those meetings, and it actually was our Ways and Means chairman who said, which I had recommended prior to that, we knew that the executive had made a statement that he was going to try to address it in his budget. So the decision was made by legislators to wait to see what his plan was, absolutely, and then whether we would agree with it or not, and we did. And we agreed with his plan for 2013, 14, 15. So then that's how it brought us up to date, where all of a sudden, when the state went from 50-50 share
to 71
for local and 29 for the state than all the other towns, then that hit them hard.
Right.
And that's why we were able to get it passed.
Right.
You know, so.
A little familiar with it, because I was on a town.
Yeah, I didn't know if you knew a little bit about the background. So this is, so now for me, the argument that we used all these years for the county to take it over applies now to the state. You know.
Yep.
Same argument.
Agreed.
So, you know.
Just point of order, was it moved and seconded?
It was moved,
okay.
And I seconded it.
Okay, I just wanted to double check, sorry.
Yeah.
No, I agree. You know,
I should have spoke louder.
No, I'm trying to wake up and it's not good.
An unfunded mandate, you know, and if that's what we're going
The nerve, though, you know, to increase the cost to us and then say, okay, now we want you to pay for it. That is just, to me, I can't even. I go nuts when I think about it.
I was surprised that they could even do that in their budget, because right, in 2012 it went from 50-50 to 79-21.
Mm-hmm.
And what to say that they won't make it 90-10?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
It's a slippery slope.
State does a lot of things 90-10.
You know, and I did a little bit of homework on it, and I had some conversations with Ken. And I was amazed when, you know, you hear people say all the time how, you know, New York State is the most generous with their welfare program and safety net. It's incredible. We are the only state out of, I think there's four others that have similar programs,
mm-hmm.
but not exactly.
Sure.
We are the only ones that they have a 2-year limit on cash assistance, but no limit on rent or utilities. No limit. You could be on it forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers everybody. It even says if you abuse drugs or alcohol, whether you accept treatment or not.
Wow.
And some of it, I think, was even for immigrants. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So New York State is the. I have that at home. I'll bring it to the next meeting and show it to you.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think that this was. It would be a good thing to see happen.
Yeah.
You know, it is an election year, so yeah, it's a possibility, maybe more so now than it would be any other time. But it really, you know, I think it's wishful. You know, it should be the way that. It's done, but it's unfortunate.
Well, it raises the question, right? Now, let them answer.
Statewide, though.
Huh?
I mean, it's statewide. It's not just for Ulster County. I think, can they actually do that? It's got to be statewide.
Oh, yeah.
Safety net statewide.
Yeah, but we're asking our delegation to carry it.
Right, right.
Do a bill. Do a bill in the Assembly and the Senate. We can't. You know, we can only ask our own.
We're the only county that's blessed with Solomon Cahill.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Call the vote. Any other discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
All right.
Aye.
All right. Aye. Okay. Pass. All right. We'll move on to Resolution 83, and this is in support of the New York State. The Senate bill, it's also known as the Public Assistance Integrity Act, and what that does, it closes.
Why don't you make a motion so you can have somebody move it? And
got it.
And
yeah, move for discussion.
I'll move for discussion.
Second. Okay. And what that does, it closes the loophole that enables people who are on public assistance to use EBT cards at ATMs, in casinos, liquor stores, adult entertainment establishments, because part of the program is cash. So, and that, like you were speaking to before, I guess what the food stamps doesn't cover, they can withdraw cash from ATMs to purchase like paper products, school supplies, and so forth. And thus far, there hasn't been a law that would close that loophole. So it passed through the Senate in June, and the Assembly won't take it up. So
they won't take it up?
They won't.
Sure. Just, This was actually a requirement in federal law that each state had to adopt a plan to address and restrict what venues that EBT cards could be put in place. Back in March, end of January, the State Office for Temporary Disability Assistance implemented this restriction administratively. So currently, though the state legislature has enacted, there are none of these venues accepting EBT cards in those venues. And then what's included in the proposed state budget are financial penalties against vendors that allow it, even though they've agreed administratively not to allow the use of the cards in the venues.
Right. Yep, exactly. And part of the, what was it, the middle class tax relief and Job Creation Act of 2012, I think was what you were referencing. Yeah, that the penalties could be up to 5%, which would be in like $122 million in New York State. So,
So
if they don't pass it, you know, perhaps for political reasons, then they're really hurting the people that they're trying to protect now. So, yeah, it's not a good thing. It was supposed to be passed in February, and it was the deadline. And I think you can breathe it.
But with or without this law, currently the EBT cards, are not being used in those venues.
Mm-hmm.
It was implemented through regulation through the State Liquor Authority and the other state agencies implemented administratively. So, even without this, those cards aren't being used in those venues.
Well, the card, but you can withdraw cash from an ATM in one of those establishments, correct?
You can't. They got the plan in place before the February 1st deadline, because there was, with this federal law, there was a requirement that if you didn't make changes before February 1st, you would lose a portion of your federal temporary assistance dollars. And our state got the plan done in time. What they don't have in place right now are the penalties. So they included that as part of the state budget.
And this establishes that.
All right, wait a minute. I don't understand. Wait a minute. So this isn't from the governor's office? Who you're saying did this?
This came through the governor's office. The administrative change was implemented through the executive branch.
The regulations.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to statute.
All right.
I don't know if this particular law is needed at this point. I do know that a piece as it relates to penalties is still needed, and they're debating that as part of the new state budget for April.
Because part of that is also creating a fund in order to accept those penalties.
I believe so, yes.
So before February 1st, you could take one of these EBT cards to a cash machine and withdraw money?
You can do it right now, sure.
You can do it right now.
But you can't do it in those establishments.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Again,
but you can go to a bank's ATM and do it.
I mean, you don't get a check anymore. It's all a benefits card.
Right. No, I understand that.
Depending on what programs you're enrolled in, those dollars are available on the card.
So how are they going to find out whether or not they're using it for what it's intended to be used
for? That's how they found out that there was a problem. It really isn't a rampant problem here in Ulster County, but they were able to. There were some exposés. Some of the larger news agencies in New York City. You know, obviously, like Las Vegas, Nevada.
Well, we don't have a casino yet. That's
exactly,
why it's, it'll catch up.
But liquor stores and things. So some of the larger news agencies nationally did an analysis where they, raised the how appropriate is it for you to be using a electronic benefits card in a liquor store or
there's a black market too.
So that's why why it was there was some there was federal law change, and it created a carrot, a stick that if states implemented this change. They would be fine. If not, it would be a fiscal penalty. And I want to at least let the committee know that I do know that our state did get a plan that was acceptable to the federal government in place for the February 1st.
So even though this law may or may not be needed, I think we should show support for that mindset by passing a resolution in support.
It's your program.
Yeah, but you're passing something that's already been done. It's up to you. I'm only voicing my opinion. I'll support it if that's what you want to do. But personally, I would think that would give you an opportunity to say, to comment that Mm-hmm. Because somebody might get up then and say, well, why are you doing this?
Also, part of that was to establish a fund in order to accept monies as a result of the
fine.
Penalty.
The fine.
So that it's all part of it, and that part is what's obviously part of the assembly.
And is that in the resolve?
Yes,
That piece is currently under discussion as part of the state budget.
Right.
Where is it? The first resolve? Where? We should add that if it's not here.
It's the 1, 2, 3, 4th, or 5th whereas down.
Right.
Federal government has mandated each state establish a fraud prevention place. Does not act.
Why don't you make it a resolve?
New York State. Cutting federal.
Because then it's
resolving, but for what purpose, though? Like we're resolving to support the whole statute, the bill. It does have.
Wait a minute.
And the fraud and abuse, it is resolved on the back.
Yes. I don't know.
Because it says part of it from fraud and abuse of public assistance.
Yeah.
The fortune. $122 million.
Well,
I don't know what
they're not letting anybody through.
I don't understand the benefit of doing.
I've worked for two state agencies, and they've reversed policies hundreds of times in my stay throughout those. Right now, if it's agency based, the next governor or someone else could say, policy, we don't like that anymore.
Okay.
If you mandate it by law, at least then the Senate or the Assembly would have to modify it. Rather than just an agency.
I think the only thing I would add to that is that if someone were to modify it, we'd put in jeopardy federal dollars of what the state's getting. The federal government's requiring this.
Never stopped them before.
Yeah.
The other part of it, too, is that in the statute, they may have more teeth in the penalty section. That it may not have an administration. And I also, it's possible that they create it in the budget. The fund, but the administratively you can't just create a fund. It has to either by budget or by statute.
And there's no penalties in administrative.
Right. So right now, there's no teeth to it. So if somebody's violating it, it's like, you're violating it, but there's nothing to do. There's no way to enforce it. So at least this bill has, from what I understand, has enforcement mechanisms. So that
should. Should we mention somewhere here, and it doesn't have to be a big long paragraph, that we're exactly what you're just saying, that we're aware of, that the governor has forbidden this, but the reason why we want it passed by the Assembly and the Senate, for the reasons you just gave. Or do you don't think it's necessary?
Well, that's really up to the sponsor.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's necessary, being that that it's in support of the entire bill. Whether part of the bill, has already not been passed, but that's been implemented. I think, as a whole, it's mentioned in the resolve that we'll support everything.
All right. Yeah.
I think also that since we did have a very big case of misuse of these EBT cards, was it 2 years ago or last year?
2 years.
2 years ago. That,
well, we find them all the time. They're in the paper all
right,
the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that enforcement is hard enough, but I think that if we could just pass this resolution, it's a memorializing resolution.
Yeah.
It puts it back on top. It lets the taxpayers know that we're concerned about this, that we don't like the misuse of public funds. I'm surprised that you could go to a cash machine and then drive to a casino and spend that money still.
So
and you and
get
there's nothing they can do about it. Or, go to a bank, get your money, and then go to the liquor store.
Unfortunately, they probably won't.
That's crazy.
Oh, no, they could sell those cards for 50 cents on a dollar to a grocery.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, I think it's just important that taxpayers know that we're kind of on top of it and we're concerned and that we're doing everything we can.
Yeah, I don't have any problem. It's good to be, in case someone has a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let them know why we're doing it.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on the resolution? Mm-hmm. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. to resolution 91. That's approving the extension of contract and access of excess of $50,000 entered into by the county Hudson family at Woodstock.
Is this in addition to the one we did? I mean, it's like the third time?
Mm-hmm.
Is this the third time? Or? Yeah.
This is the additional state aid that was made available for some
time. Okay, it's pass through.
Yeah.
Motion.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Yeah. Mom, discussion? Apple Pie, and Chevrolet.
Anything?
No. Take any money they want to get.
Yeah, no, I just have one question, though. It says, the agency to receive New York State OMH and OASIS aid and county contribution to provide hotline. So is this just pass-through money, or is it county?
They're expanding. This is the Family Four Mental Health Programming, and they're expanding to put an outreach program in. The extra dollars are for an outreach program, 100% state.
Oh, okay, because it says county contribution.
I know, but you keep reading, Carl. They do get county dollar support.
Where do you see county contribution?
Right. Actually, in the...
These particular state dollars are used.
It's in the description.
Oh. Okay.
That's from the abstract.
So it's really pass-through. Okay.
It's 100%.
Just one.
Yeah. All state. We like state money.
Yeah, we
like
We need it. We need the service.
There we go.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah. 112. Okay, that's resolution 112. That's the appropriation for awareness.
I'd move it, but I can't.
Okay.
No, you can move it. You can't vote on it.
Oh, I move it.
I'll second it.
You move it for discussion purposes, am I correct, Legislator Provenzano?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Second? I
second it. Okay. All right. Any discussion?
Can
we discuss it?
You want to talk?
Yeah. I actually was almost going to ask to go into executive session because of the nature of the contract and certain members of this committee that are... may or may not be associated with it, but if I can speak, but does not vote, then I'll be happy with that.
Well, she said we could speak.
I think we can speak. You can't vote on it.
Okay.
I was given another. That's what Vicky told us.
Oh, is that what Cappy said?
Yeah, I'd like to make
a. Can't discuss it.
I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session to discuss the terms of this contract as it relates to Jeanette and I.
Or would you just? Or if there was a conflict of interest, why wouldn't you just recuse yourself?
Because I don't believe there is.
But if you got the attorney,
there is. I mean, I think that there is a conflict in that regard. I mean, I agree with Cappy in that regard.
Actually, that it's a legislative leadership meeting, so when they gave a conference, they said you're supposed to actually leave a room. That's what they recommend when there's conflicts of interest. That's what they were telling us. You're not even supposed to stay present for discussion and voting.
Mm. Okay. Well, then I'll withdraw my
motion.
Well,
I know is that Sessions, some have done it. I've never seen anybody recuse themselves from the actual committee meeting, ever.
I'm just saying what I was.
We did.
Know what I'm talking about. That's what they present. That's
I'm sorry. People
just don't do it.
I've been here a long time, and nobody has ever.
We've done that at the town level.
Nobody has ever left a committee meeting that knew they had a conflict of some kind or another. They did when we got into the legislative floor. And that was only recently. Last few years, a couple of people did that. Then we had some attorneys say, you don't have to do that.
Well, I'm not going to... Mr. Weiner is the parliamentarian here, so I'm not going to overrule anything that he said. So why don't you withdraw your motion? You withdraw your motion, and then either Mr. Litz or Mr. Allen can make their motion, and you can as well. To move it to discuss this, and then if Mr. Weiner suggested that you not partake in the conversation, then. But you do have to say what your conflict is,
right?
You're abstaining.
That's right. Well, I didn't get any written.
I emailed him this morning. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'll state my.
Why don't we have a move?
I'll move it.
You're withdrawing. Right. Legislator Provenzano for the
evening. I'll withdraw my motion under protest.
Okay. And then did Mr. Allen second it?
Someone move it.
Second
it.
Okay.
All right. So now you have for discussion. You have to abstain, Legislator Buffalo?
Well, I'll explain my abstention when the vote comes, I guess, unless I'm going to explain
it. There's any discussion on this.
Any discussion? From what I've heard, it's a good program. And my discussions with Jeanette and I'm okay with this. If anybody else?
Can you explain the program a little bit?
Sure.
I believe that Marie is here. Marie Schultz is here from AWARE, so she can. We're in this program.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Yeah, you're welcome to tell us a little bit about the program.
So AWARENESS is a peer-to-peer education program that started back in 2006. We've been a 501c3 since then. We've had no formalized funding. Some fundraisers kind of run on with volunteers. A lot of the youth get mandated in the program. Well, they get mandated. They get given a choice that they can come to the program as opposed to to get an adjournment and contemplation of dismissal. Mm-hmm. So they come to the first night is the last Friday of the month at the Ulster County Law Enforcement Center, where they do a questionnaire that's evidence-based about their use. They see a DVD that is, it was started because a boy killed his friend on prom night in a drunk driving crash, mm-hmm. and they see him in prison and learn how he got there. There's a real cell in the room they sit in to know the serious side. Mm-hmm. And then we have weekly meetings that are held at the youth center in New Paltz for high school level, and then college kids started a club at SUNY New Paltz campus. Mm-hmm. So they come to the weekly meetings, and probably 8 out of 10 end up staying in and volunteering, and we now have many kids. It's meant for in between nothing and outpatient for kids that are first offenders for alcohol and substance use, but many times they're heavily addicted and nobody knows about it. So we do have kids that have come through, some get a higher level of care, that are now been sober for years that are still working in the program. The sheriff highly supports it, and he told me to let everybody know that he is behind it 100%. And if anybody wants to talk to him about it, he's open.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Nope.
No? Okay. We'll call the vote.
Aye.
Aye.
I am abstaining with the reason because I have been involved in investigating the awareness program. I've attended a couple of meetings. Formally, I don't believe I am a advisory committee man. I was never inducted into the group. I just kind of went and saw things. Marie put my name on her brochure as an advisory member, but I actually, have never signed any paper stating that I am or took an oath to this. I met Marie through the Ulster Prevention Council, which I am the legislative appointee for, mm-hmm. And I have been advocating for her program because that's where I saw it. But I will recuse myself because even if there's an air of conflict of interest, I will definitely just abstain. But I don't believe I'm actually an advisory board member. I make no decisions for the group except in a capacity as a lawmaker listening to her pleas for funding.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, and for myself also, I recently became a board member, I think the last year, Marie? It's been about a year.
Well, we have a real board, that's the executive board, and the advisory board is just kind of a big committee of community members that supports the program. And,
okay.
You know, make decisions.
But I know of Marie's program for many years, and I tell you, if you have never had the opportunity, let me put it another way, if you have an opportunity to attend one of those meetings where you see the young people actually, I mean, get up and speak about this program. It's incredible. It's a tremendous, wonderful idea. And I think what happens is, I'm just going to give you my personal opinion. I think there are groups that receive a lot of funding, and this is part of what they should be doing, coming up with programs that work. And Marie has found a program that works. And I think because she doesn't have a lot of fancy initials after her name, which I hope we're going to see some soon, I think that's where the friction comes in. I mean, to me, I would think prevention connection. I would think a group like that would want to fund something like this, you know, because it works. I tell you, it's so impressive to see the, and look at any of us, whether you have sons or daughters or not, you have nieces, nephews, there's always somebody in the family, they're good kids, and they just made a very poor choice, young and life. And to just wipe them off and say, well, prison's where they should be, is just not the answer, in my opinion. And I applaud Marie for sticking with it all these years against a lot of odds. And so as long as I'm able to, I tell you, I would fight for her and speak for her program because it works. You know, so I just want to publicly thank her for what she does. Sorry?
Very good.
Somehow,
within our abstained vote, we got to speak.
We may have to change.
Well, I might be penalized. I don't know. Carly?
Because it's being brought
up. Yeah, I withdrew my support for the resolution. I withdrew my sponsorship. It's just Mary Squirrel. I don't know why it hasn't changed. I think he told me it changed, but.
Yeah. Well, okay. Maybe that he did it before it got amended.
Legislator Carl Buffelio and Mary Worrell offer the following. It should just be Mary Worrell.
Or you can add my name there if you'd like.
We also have an interlock program for kids who get DWIs, AIs too, where we give them free interlocks and they put them in voluntarily prior to going to court, and the judges take that in consideration and it immediately changes their behavior because a lot of them don't realize the day after they drink that they can't drive. So it keeps the community safe, it keeps them safe, and the judges have been looking at it favorably because they're being proactive and it actually helps them too.
The abuse interlock program is known nationwide as a behavioral modification tool. MAD pushes it in every legislation in every single state for the abuse interlock program. I just want to say I cover 10 states from Texas to Maine, and there's not another program like this out there. The closest one that I have that I've seen is the Nassau County one in New York State, but it doesn't go as far as what Marie's program does, and you know, working with Ken Winters and the development that they've done is quite amazing.
Good to hear. Now, just a quick question: How are the monies appropriated within the program? Like the $5,000, is that going to go?
Well, we originally had a budget. I think it was like $28,000. Okay. That was including some, you know, having some other parent counselors and that kind of thing. So they approved $5,000. So we're going to try to. I met with probation. We're taking in some of their clients now. We're utilizing that funding.
Right.
We don't. Nobody gets paid. We haven't had any way I can vote. We're going to try to just serve more of their clientele so that we have them to also, at the end of this, tell you what the results were as far as they've seen with their.
So you're not either. There wouldn't be. No one would be able to draw like a salary off of that. Off the budget. Okay. All right.
How many years?
That's one of the biggest things that we see. We actually submitted last year a grant to SAMHSA. There's a coalition between the two counties here that gets a large grant. None of that money ever gets pushed to the program, so it's administrative, and that's what we're trying to turn around because you know, we need more money to go into the programs.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, what was the vote?
Three.
Okay. Three
That's
yeses, okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. 302.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, move on to new business. Legislative.
Yes, I've been trying to hammer out with Legislative Counsel Garen my idea about the drop. Prescription drug drop boxes and creating a local law mandating that pharmacies display the location of all the drop boxes in Ulster County.
Mm-hmm.
And we had investigated why don't the pharmacies take back the pharmaceuticals, but they're not allowed by law to do that right now. And then we thought that maybe we could informed the public at the pharmacies by retooling the computer system there so that when they get all their pharmaceutical products, there's always some kind of fact data sheet on the prescription itself.
It's called a patient package insert.
Right. And Erica did some research on that, and it's a federal program, and it states in the law that you cannot modify that at all. So we can't do that. So I want to go back to just the displaying of all the locations of the drop boxes. And I know there's some logistics to that because we only have 7 right now in the county, and that's going to change and could possibly, some of them, you know, may or may not stick with the program depending on the whim of the town boards in that their particular towns. Legislative Garen had mentioned to me that she talked to her town police chief, and she just wanted to reiterate to him that if the town board decided it was disruptive to have that box in the police station, that they could vote to get that thing out of there. And then we're going to always have to change the locations, you know, of the drop boxes. So
it's limited by law, forgive me.
That's what you're saying. Limited.
It's only, do you mind if I...
No, go ahead.
There's two dilemmas right now. One is that the only, under the current law, there was a statute that was passed in 2012. The statute only allows right now police stations, law enforcement agencies to take the unused prescriptions, regardless of what they are, back because they are under DEA. We have multiple layers because we have FDA for patients and DEA for the control, and so DEA is involved because of controlled substances. So DEA says only law enforcement can take them back right now. Then the current statute sunsets in September. September 26th, and the new one goes into effect on September 27th of this year, which allows the Department of Health to implement regulations which would allow pharmacies to also take them back. But again, it's a voluntary program. And says it very clearly in the statute that nothing in the statute is imposing municipalities to have to participate in the take back programs or the pharmacies. And so that's one of the things that we've been discussing is right now we're kind of like in this lull because we create signs because one of the things that Legislative Affilio talked about was creating is having Ulster Prevention create the sign and post it or having the pharmacies do it. Then they're going to have to redo it all over again when new ones come on board. Who's going to track that? Because I don't even know if Department of Health would really necessarily, local Department of Health would be tracking it. And then come September, then the pharmacies may be able to take them back, but not all of them are going to participate. So it's a logistical problem, and then the signs and what size of the sign. So that's one of the things we've been trying to figure out how to overcome.
Well, couldn't you just have a sign that in general says if you have narcotics that, you know, you wish to dispose of, contact your police department to see if they'll accept them? I mean, at least that gets a message out there that, hey, that's a possibility. And then maybe you could list the police departments and the phone numbers.
Well, if you're going to do that, you might as well.
You could ask every town supervisor if you could put it up in town halls or convenient food markets. They're all willing to do that.
CWC at all? The Casco Watershed Corporation?
No.
They had a drug program. They were picking drugs up from nursing homes and other areas, and they were taking them to the incinerator down there. But you might want to see where they have expanded that to.
I don't know how they did that.
Yeah, it can only be done by law enforcement.
Yeah, I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, right. I mean, they have, like, the RRA has dropped, I think it was two days every once in a while, like twice a year.
Andrew Cuomo, when he was running for governor, he... Or when he first ran, when he first got in office, he stood in New York City and said something about the upstate. People were the nursing homes and flushing dangerous drugs down. So then they put a program together, and they actually went around to all the nursing homes and picked up the drugs, took them to the incinerator underneath armed guard, police guard, and they have a program going. So I know they had some kind of a thing that may be able to help the county.
Well, here's my reason for doing this, though. One, it's safety, okay? We have this is the Health Committee, Health and Social Services Committee. We have a responsibility to protect small children, teenagers, from the abuses of prescription drugs when it's so easily available to them in their parents' medicine chests or here or there. This is a small gesture to try to get these drugs disposed of properly instead of in the hands of a 16-year-old who can OD on them
or sell them
or, you know, or whatever. That was my first thing. The second is that I think it's important that you go right at the point of purchase, right where it starts. You get your prescription at the pharmacy. I don't think it's a hardship for them to display the proper way to get rid of these, the proper disposal. And since Ulcer Prevention has already been putting these drop boxes in via a grant, that I think it's a perfect fit, because you can just look right away and say, oh, there's no drop box in the Sopus, but there's one in Saugerties, or there's one in SUNY New Paltz or Rosendale. And as time goes on, there's going to be more. There's one in Woodstock, right? I think that was the last one that was put in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you hit the pharmacies, it's constant, because the only reason why you're in the pharmacy, besides picking up non-prescription drugs, is to pick up prescription drugs.
Yeah, right.
So
shopping.
You're going to see it every time you go, and it's going to be, oh, yeah, okay, I've got to get rid of these here, And I understand, you know, these things cost quite a bit of money. They're like $900 a piece. And they're going ahead with it, regardless of what the law may or may not do in the future. Now, this sunset clause with the law right now in September says that the health department, the New York State Health Department, may, you know, they'll have the ability now to, if they want to, require pharmacies to do that. But
no,
I think
they're not going to require them. They're going to draft regulations
right.
So that if a pharmacy wants to participate. Yeah,
which is that's good too. But
well, did they have any ideas in Prevention Connection what to do?
Also, Prevention Council. They like the idea of the posted notices in the.
Well, why don't they pursue it?
Well, they have the listing. Like, just make this bigger. This is exactly what it would look like. It's not a good printout, but you know, I mean, you got the county here, and you've got all the Dropbox locations, the police departments, addresses, and phone numbers. And this is a earlier one because Woodstock isn't on it, you know. But I mean, in the local law, I have to get down to the nitty gritty of how big is the sign going to be, where should it be displayed, you know, things like that, and why. I mean, the intent of the law is what? It's, I think, for public safety. One, for public safety. Two, for to prevent criminal intent to sell drugs. Three, environmental issues. You can't flush these things down the toilet without some kind of environmental impact. But.
Well, unfortunately, FDA doesn't necessarily agree with you. That's the other problem with some of this, too, is that the FDA puts out there about how to dispose of the drugs.
They say flush
them? There's some of them they say you can
really?
Flush. Yes.
Mm. Wow.
Because that's one of... I've learned more about prescription drugs than I've ever wanted to know, I ever thought I was going to know. And that's one of the things we talked about, too, is that part of this is getting undermined by the FDA itself. And I, you know what, I wish I had the wherewithal to bring the stuff that I printed off.
I'm not giving this up. I'm gonna tweak this so that it works for everybody. I don't want to put an undue burden on pharmacies. I don't want to single out pharmacies and saying you have to buy a $75 sign every couple of months as we change it. Although maybe it can be made of a Velcro and put a glass cover on it. Oh, we got a new one, Woodstock. We got a new one, you know, Sopus. There's got to be a way to do it. I mean, you could do public service announcements, but that's only assuming people are listening. And I think the source point is the pharmacy, and that's where people are going to remember. They keep going to the pharmacy, and they keep being reminded. Or even have the pharmacy just print it out and hand it to the customer. I wouldn't even, you know, I think that would be...
Well, they have other informational things on the counter. I know in a drugstore I go, you know, they have a lot of different things.
Actually, to give you a 20-page report with your prescription medicine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On conflicts and all of those
that
things.
That is
if
the...
If they put... That's the packet.
Yeah.
But if that were included in there and you're reading down through there and it's like, oh, when I no longer need this drug, I can put it there.
We thought about that. And yeah. Then I found out that it's highly regulated by FDA. It's everything is generated by them as to what can be included, what can't be included. So we really we don't have the ability to screw around with that
because
it's a big deal. That's one of the things I found out how big. I don't know. I don't take any.
Yeah, we don't. Locally,
so I was reading the whole thing that's involved with FDA, and it's a big deal.
What do you think, Chris?
So,
got any idea?
I don't know.
Sounds like a good idea to me. I mean, what's been his discussions about it before?
I'm going to go back to Ulster Prevention Council and see what they can do. I mean, if they can print up the signs and they take stewardship of that part of the local law, then the only other thing is to who's going to enforce it. Is it going to be our county health department? I mean, that would be the perfect fit. And then I want to get them involved in it too, because I want to hear what they have to say.
Why would a pharmacy not want to participate?
No, absolutely. I don't think they wouldn't, unless it cost them an undue burden.
If you printed these all up and went to a pharmacy and said, hey, and explain it to them and leave it there for them to distribute. I don't see any pharmacy saying I don't want to do that.
But if it's going to be an act by the legislature, it should either be a local law or it's got to be a local law or a mandate, because you can't just willy nilly say you can do this if you want. I don't know. Can you?
Well, you can't do a local law saying pharmacies must display this, or must.
It's not going to be effective if they don't all do it.
I agree, but you're on the prevention council is already dealing with. I mean, and that's volunteer stuff, right?
It's all volunteer.
So why don't they take the first step initiative?
I mean,
what could it cost to print 1,000 of these on regular paper? $10.
I thought when I talked to Chief Snogger that he said that there was something that the Prevention Council was going to distribute to the pharmacies.
Yeah, they have.
And they have
they
something
have
that
this,
they were
going
to distribute.
Yep.
So they're already going to do it.
You guys have been very progressive in what you've been trying to do. So I don't know. He and I talked very quickly because we both had phone calls. So, but I thought there was something you guys were working on as far as inserts or something.
Well, we were in the discussion phase, and that's where my idea of a local law came out of. I mean, we don't have anything set in stone right now. He's also a member of the Prescription Drug Task Force, and they're the ones that are really implementing these drop boxes through Ulster Prevention. With funding from, it was a grant, but then also we get funded from OASIS and Family Services. So, but we've never had a concrete. When I presented this to Cheryl DePaula, who's the director of Ulster Prevention, she thought it was a great idea. She said, right on the money. She said, that's what we want to do. So maybe he's taking, what she's talking to him about, as that's what we're going to do, is we're going to create a local law to have pharmacies prominently post the location of the drop boxes. I mean, I don't see how else we could do it, because it's kind of like throwing darts at a board. Unless everybody participates, it's not going to be that effective. I mean, it's not going to be totally 100% effective anyway.
You said that we can't do that with the pharmacy.
Not on the patient packet insert.
Right.
That's what it's called. The information.
I mean, you wouldn't need to pass a local law to ask a pharmacy to display a bunch of these.
Well, you'd be asking them to do it on a voluntary level, but I believe Legislator Fafilio wants is to make it a mandate. That's what his intention is.
A law that says they must give that to each customer.
Well, have a sign at least. The display.
Right.
And that's been one of our
simplest terms. Every employer has to post their wage, you know, mm-hmm. the minimum wage, and they have to post disability benefit things. Mm-hmm. This is just a, mm-hmm. but this is, it's not, I don't think it's going to really, it's a win-win for the pharmacy. It's customer service for the pharmacy. It's mm-hmm. letting people know what, you know, here's how to properly dispose of these, regardless of what the EPA is going to say or not say. Because I think that they would say, if you're disposing of these drugs in a cesspool or a leach field, they would probably say, no, that's polluting the environment. But if it's a municipal water supply and sewer mm-hmm. treatment plant, they're probably okay it, you know. I don't want to get down to that level. I really don't. I just want to display the location of the drop boxes and pharmacies.
Maybe not.
No, it's okay. I'll scan that stuff, see what I found from
okay.
the FDA.
And I'm going to continue to work on it.
Program, the SHARP program for the needles,
mm-hmm.
That's implemented somehow countywide or probably statewide.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so maybe
the
same
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, some
they
of the
stuff
you don't want to
be
municipal either.
We
spend millions of dollars growing bacteria.
Maybe the health
antibiotics kill bacteria.
It's called the SHARP program.
Mm-hmm.
So you flush an antibiotics, you're
I don't know if
you're
the
disabling your
regulates your needles. I don't know. I didn't get that far.
I mean, I had assumed that it was illegal to flush with your drugs out, but anyway, so that's where we're at. I'm going
like, to wow.
hopeful that I can get something together for next month.
Definitely. Right. So, do you know how many pharmacies there are countywide?
I don't, but I bet you I can get that information from the health department.
Quite a few.
Just kind of a lot of pharmacies.
One of the protocols is it was a little bit early yet, and I wanted to talk to the county executive's office, but I wanted to see if this was something that could actually be done before I ask for their assistance, but I'm probably going to want to ask to speak to Dr. Carol Smith, and get her thoughts about it. I don't want to call her directly. I want to go through the proper channels. So, we all know what happens when I don't go through the proper channels.
Well, the proper channel, you should have spoke to Ken Cornell. He was here tonight.
This is new business. He bolted out of here.
He could have brought it up after the vote. That's what I said in the very beginning. If you have anything you want addressed to Ken Cornell, let's bring it up when we were waiting for Chris to come.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the resolutions.
Anything that pertains to him.
That's right. I talked to him today. I'll talk to him tomorrow.
Any old business?
I was going to bring up new stuff. But, by the way, if anybody's coming home, there's a hazardous waste spill. That's why I was late. About 20 police cars at Route 209
here?
Northbound, right underneath the Route 28 overpass. It's about 8 fire trucks and 20 police vehicles that are they're not letting traffic. It's like once you go so far, you're stuck, and then they're not letting you. I had to go on to Route 28 West because you're not allowed to progress heading towards like Hurley and Stone Ridge on 209 westbound. So then or southbound, and so I had to take. I can't get as far as to go to the 28 Kingston exit. So then I had to get onto 28 West. And I was hoping I could U-turn around and go straight down 28 East into Kingston.
Right.
And they're not letting you go that way either. They're forcing you back out onto 209.
Oh,
and then there's a state police vehicle there, and they're letting people make illegal U-turns. But there was a whole line of cars trying to do that, so by the time... But when I asked the two state police officers, I was like, yeah, I'm a county legislator. I had a meeting that started 5 minutes ago. I'm really surprised I actually even made it here. You saw the traffic backed up. And he said, "Yeah." I said, what is it, a hazardous waste spill or something? He said, yeah, it is. It's a really bad one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I was hoping they were going to let me go through. I don't know what the... But they...
Don't know what it was, though, huh?
They had two large... It looked like, you know, those big, huge... sewer piping things were on the highway. Now, if it was a hazardous waste spill, unless they fell off the truck, but they wouldn't have had traffic backed up for that. I think they were using those for collection purposes.
Or the tank split on the truck, the fuel oil tank.
Kind of get in the way here.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah. So basically, I had done some research on the memorializing resolutions I discussed a few weeks back.
Okay.
And I have a lot more clarification. I won't kill everybody with the details tonight. I'll just give some parameters of it.
Okay.
And then it's something that I hope to have for two resolutions next month, one to the state legislature and one to the United States Congress. One on the state level would deal with essentially putting a specific subsection of the ordinance that deals with falsification of business records to put something specifically in there that directs law enforcement to conduct investigations and put forth indictments when there's falsification of business records that takes place in the healthcare industry. If you read through that legal ordinance right now in the New York State Penal Code, there's nothing that specifies when falsification of business records take place in the healthcare industry. The second resolution that would go to Congress, that essentially deals with HIPAA. I've discovered that within the dissemination of healthcare records in HIPAA, when there's information that changes hands between like hospitals, nursing homes, doctor's offices, and when it goes to the insurance companies, if it's disseminated in the form of an email, a facsimile, or a telephone call, the written transcript of that information is not accessible by the patients themselves or their relatives unless there's litigation involved, a criminal investigation, and there's a formal written request from the lawyer or the patient when the litigation is ensuing. Essentially, I discussed it with a member of the HIPAA privacy department at Aetna Insurance Company, and I asked him specifically about it, and I asked him if it would be okay. He would rather his specific name, he'd rather remain anonymous. I told him what I was doing with this. He essentially said it's considered proprietary secretive information, and that is why it's not allowed to be accessible and readily available to patients upon just an informal request. You know, it's litigation-only type circumstances or criminal investigation. So what I suspect happened is HIPAA, you know, all of us probably are led to believe HIPAA, when you go into a doctor's office, just has to deal with the privacy of your healthcare records, and so that people that shouldn't be seeing your healthcare records, that it's everything's kept secure through that process. But in actuality, I've been researching HIPAA when it was first introduced in Congress in 1996 when they were first deliberating it. It essentially deals with cutting, the main focal point of HIPAA is to cut costs in Medicaid and Medicare. And what I think happened was is that behind closed doors and in back rooms, I think there was, you know, healthcare executives, healthcare lobbyists, healthcare lawyers with, you know, other lawyers with, you know, behind Congress's back, I think, formulated this methodology so that it makes it much easier for them to, like, for example, if you're discharged from a hospital or a nursing home and they submit the information, they conflate your medical records and then they disseminate it in the form of an email, a fax, or a phone call, you can call up the insurance company and ask them, gee, why was I discharged from the hospital? Why was I discharged from this nursing home? Or your relative can. And like in designated healthcare proxy, they can verbally tell you what was said in your record, but they can't send you a written statement that it was sent, if it was sent in one of those three modes. So essentially, with everything going over to electronic, you know, an email, you know, fax machines have been around for a long time, but it's something I think that was calculated to make it more difficult for patients to protest. You know, a denial of coverage, a denial of continuation of coverage, and it makes it easier for the insurance companies to cut costs that way. So I think those were the intent purposes behind it. I think it's just one of those nuances. There's lots of legislation, you know, and I've been doing this for 2.5 months now, and I notice, you know, there's legislation that we vote on, and we get a set dollar amount. And, you know, sometimes we voted on like $8 million worth of materials in of resolutions in Public Works Committee last week. And yet, you know, Peter Lauren brought up the fact, well, gee, how come there's nobody here? There was two specific resolutions that he was kind of curious as to why there was nobody here to present information on what was going on. You know, one had to do with the purchase of 30 homes with FEMA, with it was like $6.4 million, and then one had to do with the reservation,
well, that,
renovation at Ulster Community
College. We all knew that.
Peter just brought up the issue. But, you know, my point is there's nuances in legislation that goes through the perceptive awareness of legislators, and I think I've just done, just through coincidence of dealing being, you know, healthcare proxy and power of attorney of my father when he was in a nursing home out of county, and there was some fraudulent activity that took place. I discovered something, you know, a flaw in HIPAA.
Can I ask you a question? I could see where, you know, the abuse is. I could see there's, whether it's a loophole or the way, you know, by design. But have you been in contact with any other people who are dissatisfied with the results that they got from health care from their families and getting their information?
Honestly, no.
Because I know, like, you could sign a statement when you're going in a hospital that allows a third party, like, you know, your spouse or your brother or, you know, a sibling, to have access to all your medical records. Is that what you had with your father?
Well, yeah, that would be termed healthcare proxy, but, I mean, when you...
Wait a minute, though. That's really not what Chris is talking about.
No, no, I understand that, but what I'm trying to find out is if there's other people who have been...
You wouldn't know unless there was a situation created, say, like Chris's.
Right.
And I know some people where, you know, you could be in a nursing home and, you know, for something happened, you know, and you're trying to get the information, but there's certain information you can't get. And explain that, Chris, but just, and you explained it so well.
So
with just a couple of...
Yeah, so essentially, like if, the nursing home where my father was, it was a chain, okay, and they're in, like, four or five states, and they have full-time employees that work for them, and I guess you would term them to be their medical records keepers, insurance liaison.
But didn't they refuse insurance or something?
Right,
and then
right.
You tried to find out why.
Exactly.
And you found out.
Right, the customer service representative from Aetna Insurance Company, you know, she... put me on hold, came back on, and she said, your father, it says here, your father can ambulate distances greater than household. And then there was some other written language that was written to make it sound like he was fit as a fiddle. You know, it said, can ambulate distances greater than household, doesn't receive intravenous or intramuscular medication, does not have any open wounds or sores, is in general good health, therefore does not require any further skilled nursing supervision. That was written by the nursing home to get his coverage continued. So they obviously wrote that to get him out of there. And they had missed the doctor's appointment, and he needed to get an X-ray on his leg after he'd been in traction for a month and a half. To, you know, when you're in traction, you have a leg fracture, you need to get an X-ray after you're taken out of traction to determine that.
Look at the end result was.
The end result was there was a discrepancy. Ambulate distances and greater than household essentially means
it
that
wasn't true.
It wasn't true at all. It means you could walk around the home unsupervised, and he couldn't even stand on his own.
But you weren't really privy to that information.
I was privy to the oral summary of
it, but not the written.
But not written proof where I could say, gee, that's falsification of business records, you know, in violation of Penal Code, New York State Penal Code 125 or 127, so I forget these, it's one of those two numbers, and she might know, and falsification of business records, if you were to call the state police or the county sheriff's department and say, gee, you know, this nursing home where my father's a patient, there's been falsification of business records that's taken place, and they say, okay, where's your proof? You can't get written proof, you know? You would have to...
Yeah, but I wanted you to try to explain that one point where he's coming from. I mean, all the rest
so
of it.
So it's like you can get an oral summary of the medical records,
but you can't get written
unless there's already litigation or criminal investigation involved. Yeah.
So you would never know.
By that time, it's too late.
Yeah, you would never know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's...
If you didn't quit.
So on one hand, they falsified records to keep the patient on Medicaid. And,
Medicare.
And,
no, it's the other way around,
Medicare,
actually.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but then
Medicare
to get rid of
pays
them...
more.
Yeah,
but then, okay, Medicare,
and
whatever.
You can only keep them for 100 days.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And then on the other hand, then they sucked whatever they could out of the system, and now they wanted him out?
They wanted him out because they were afraid that he would get... And he did. He ended up getting injured. That's the funny thing about it is they ended up dropping him in physical therapy, and he got hurt later on after... Because I won an appeal. Yeah, it's
and I got to say, that's the state of healthcare in this country. It's not in this state, though.
But no, I think, in order for, it would make a very powerful statement from this healthcare committee with that, because if you look at the way, like, you know, that I have some serious concerns about the Affordable Care Act right now, because it was written by the insurance companies. It wasn't really written by government. It was written. So I mean, if
you put my name off there,
you know, if you look at HIPAA, mm-hmm. there's obviously, it's like the insurance companies had their hand in this. So it's emblematic of health insurance in the United States,
sure.
is that it's written, it's not for the patient. The patient has little to no knowledge of the nuances of these laws, and it sounds to me like through HIPAA, like I'll bring in the documentation for everybody next meeting, and I'll point out, you know, hopefully succinctly and not, you know, too much, you know, detail that consumes too much of our time.
Yeah, stick to that one point, because that explains precisely what you're looking for.
I had a private meeting with the county executive, and we were discussing, I had thrown out an idea that a constituent put up about trying to put forth a county-wide health program where Ulster County residents could get a similar health care program to like what county employees have. And basically, Mr. Hines said, you know, that would potentially bankrupt the county. He said
you don't need to do it now. They have an opportunity to get on and
Come
to the meeting Thursday night, and they'll find out how to get free health care.
Which I made a Facebook event page for, by the way, if you saw it. I don't know. I made a Facebook event page for that.
I did. I saw it.
Yeah, I'll bring in, because basically from the research, finishing up on what I was saying about HIPAA, the research I did when it was first proposed in 1996, the original framework I downloaded off the Internet, there's multiple sections where there's like the attorney general is supposed to investigate over like a 24 or 36 month period,
mm-hmm.
and then make findings and reports back about potential amendments and changes to certain subsections of HIPAA. And I don't believe any of that stuff was ever done. You know, Mike and I had a conversation about it, and I happened to bring it up to let him know what I was working on with all this. So
it appears that we have the right guy on the job. So
discovered it by accident, but you know, just reading into the details, this is what I discovered. So
Well then, keep us updated, and we'll be happy to discuss it next time. Okay. Is there any?
Did we reach out to Health Alliance? Is that
what
we spoke
about?
Oh,
I meant to ask you about.
Yes, we did. Sent them.
Right, you're going to talk to them in. Maybe week
it's going
to
be
or two.
And it was
Glenn Deck.
The CEO's name?
Glenn Deck.
He's president of the foundation.
I thought he was the chairman, the new chairman. No.
Advisory group. No, I had that. I had it wrong because I met Glenn at a chamber breakfast.
Okay.
He is. Chairman or president, whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
of the foundation, you know, that the arm that raises all the money. But he did say to me that he would be happy to come, and he would also invite the president, I think, is it Ryan?
Kevin Ryan is the chairman of the board.
Yes.
And David Scarpino is the CEO.
Yeah.
And you have an appointment to talk with
Dave
Scarpino.
Yeah, you're going to speak
Scarpino.
With him. And then the earliest
it's Thursday,
that...
Thursday, the 13th.
The earliest that he can come is...
May 5th.
Oh, it's May. Okay.
Right. Oh, May? All right, because Glenn said maybe April.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to, confirm everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I apologize. You know, I meant all week to write this down. I had gotten a call... Gosh, I can't remember her name. I know the last name was Lee. But I had a long talk with her. She's involved, it was mostly Duchess and Orange, mostly involved with families, parents or sisters and brothers of those that receive mental health care. And it's a volunteer program. And so it was very detailed. And I said to her, well, I don't have enough information, I feel, to talk really intelligent about all the programs that mm-hmm. we offer. So I advised her, gave her Ken Cornell's number to call. Mm-hmm. But I did say to her, you're more than welcome to attend our meeting, and she might do that in April.
Okay.
And in May is the Mental Health Awareness Month.
Right.
So I told her we could probably do a proclamation.
Sure.
you know. So in the meantime, I called up Ken and asked if he did speak to her, and he said yes. And she wasn't aware of a lot of the things we do, so she was going to go to a lot of those meetings and get up to speed. So maybe when she comes here in April, she can bring us up to date.
March 31st, I think, is our April meeting.
Huh?
Yes.
The end of the
week. Yeah.
What?
The last Monday of the month. It's going to be our April meeting on the 31st.
Last Monday of the month?
March 31st, the last day of this month, is our April meeting, just FYI.
Oh.
This way it fell.
What?
I'm told that would be 6:15.
Wait a minute.
Yep. So our April meeting is going to be on March 31st.
Oh, in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. It happened. It happened under
that?
Bob's watch too.
Why?
Yeah, that happened almost once in the
why? Is that so? It's just that don't we make the first Monday of the month?
Right.
Well, so how do you get?
You do. You do, but it must have backed up, you know, so that you're the first meeting, which ended that Monday is the 31st.
Well, do you want me to contact her? Right.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
Because otherwise, then we're not having a meeting until
maybe
when's the next meeting?
It would be
May.
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 Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's
maybe
crazy.
It'll snow on the 31st.
Yeah, but if you want to reach
so
out.
So I better call. Yeah,
yeah,
because I told her, you know, you'd probably be more than happy to do a proclamation for May as Mental Health Awareness Month.
Absolutely. Yeah, we could do that.
All right, I'll get a hold of her and invite her to come. Let me know the date, all right? I'll forget it when I get home.
Yeah.
March 31st?
Yes.
Yep. Glad you said that.
You know, I had all intentions. Every time I do this and I get called, I think I'm going to write that all down. I'll give a report to the committee, and then I leave home with nothing.
Do it on the golf course while you're waiting for the next
one. I'm not on the course yet.
Pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
Okay. Any old business?
I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Yeah. I'll second it.
All right.
Yep. All
right.
All right. All right. All right. Oh.